Okay, welcome back to Millennial 2020, and I'm now here with Luke Smith, who has a YouTube channel and a podcast. Luke, thank you for appearing, and would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, no problem. Giving my own introduction is always a little weird. Basically, a couple of years back, I just started doing a YouTube channel. If you try, it's not really on one topic. I think probably 80% of the videos are actually, you know, at the time I was learning how to use computers and Linux and stuff like that. So most of them are on things like that. But as time went on, I sort of branched off to other things. I don't know. It's honestly hard to explain. You just have to go there and look at the videos. A lot of them, I don't know. It's just sort of my externalization of what I want to do. More of it's become, I guess, my life development, quote unquote, that's happened in the last couple of years. When I started my YouTube channel, okay, I started it when I was in a PhD program. In graduate school's like going to college, except for you have, you know, less work to do and you have all this free time and people complain about it like it's hard, but it's actually, you know, it's a big waste of my time. But you have so much free time. It's one thing I started, and I was also very disenchanted for obvious reasons. This was actually during the Trump election back in 2016, where, you know, the hammer was really coming down hard everywhere, but especially in academia. And, one of the things I wanted to do is have just something, like I sort of lost faith in the system. So, that maybe is a recurring theme on my channel. And since then I left my PhD program. Well, formally I'm still enrolled or whatever, but I don't do anything for it. And I actually ended up moving out into the country and stuff like that. A lot of my videos have to do with self-reliance, I generally construed. So I guess that's a theme, but it's hard to explain. I don't know. You know, there's no... I never sat down and I was like, oh, I want to do this on my YouTube channel. I just sort of do whatever. That's just how I am. So
I think the very issue of self-reliance is itself very interesting now, because I see a lot of people who are thinking, how can I reduce, I mean, it's an obvious thing to say, but how can I reduce my dependence on a system that I don't trust and that I don't like and that seems unstable? It seems like 5-10 years from now, I wouldn't be surprising if all of this comes crashing down. So I think a lot of people are thinking, if not getting into actual prepping, they're definitely thinking about how can they maximize their independence. On top of that, you got a lot of people who are neets. Do you know that expression?
Yeah.
And they are thinking the same thing. How can they begin the process of becoming independent? So I think it's something that is of crucial importance, especially on YouTube. And you'll have found this yourself, that there are lots of people watching who have yet to begin their lives, or they, you know, cooped up at home for it, especially this year, or they just want a way that they could improve their lives. And I think it's definitely something that has colored my channel over the last 5 years or so. A lot of people come to me with emotional problems and so on, but also practical things. A lot of people ask me, how do I get a job? How do I get, etc. So this is the kind of thing, this is one of the main reasons I invited you onto Millennial this year, because I thought you seem like a guy who's good at giving people ideas for like practical advice or practical ideas. There was one video in particular that I mentioned to you before we started, which was the boomer economy is over. And that seems to sum it up, that the sort of ideal for life that our parents had no longer seems to apply. I mean, what would you say about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think people have this idea that their whole life is planned out before they start. Like, that's the idea you get in public schools, like, you do this, you go through high school, you go through college, and everything's sort of automated, and the system is going to supply you with a job. And if that doesn't work, well, something's wrong, or, you know, something went haywire, or it's your problem. In reality, like, you know, frankly, I don't even like these terms. Like, I think they're sort of meme-y, you know, like self-reliance or self-help or things like this. This is just called normal human behavior. And people who are stuck into this hive mind, I mean, you have to, something like prepping, you use the word prepping. You have to realize, like, 100 years ago, it was a normal thing for every single family to have a barn or at least an extended pantry where they could survive, you know, the winter without the system. You know what I mean? And after the Second World War, I mean, many bad things happened, but one of them was just this kind of, I don't know, the centralization of, I mean, there's this idea that everyone has to go through the system and live, you know, in this very attenuated way. Whereas in reality, I mean, you know, I moved out to the country again, and it's honestly just relieving, like, the mentality of people when they're actually free. Even if, and freedom sometimes means, you know, having an actually useful job, like being a plumber or a carpenter or something, because you're never going to go out of style. Doesn't matter if you're doxxed. You still have a skill. No one cares. And one of the things, you know, when I was in graduate school, it was just so depressing because, you know, everyone is just, I don't know, their fate is outside of their own hands. And a lot of people get in this, like, black-pilled mindset where they're just like, oh, I can't do anything, man. It's just over, dude. Like, my life is over, and, like, I can't do it. The system is I mean, the fact is, no matter how bad it's out there, no matter how bad things are politically, you always have more than enough wiggle room in your life to separate yourself from that. Like, the system is not omnipotent. Even if it were nearly so, it is not worth their effort to come out and hunt you if you're an actual independent person, you know? So that's what I recommend to people. There are some people who are like, totally, man, you shouldn't even vote, man. Don't do that. Don't be a part of the system. Like, don't do any, I'm not like that. I think that we live in a unique period where you can be both, financially and I guess materially independent of the hive mind, and you can also have an effect on it. I mean, you know, just to use myself as an example, it's not like I really do that much political stuff on YouTube, but my voice living out in the middle of nowhere is much larger than all of my friends who I knew in graduate school who are trying to, you know, play by the rules or something like that. And, you know, I had that choice. Am I going to keep censoring myself and just sort of domesticating yourself? That's really what you're doing. You're going through this and you're being constantly trained. You're getting constant incentives to, you know, toe the party line, or you can just leave it. And you can actually, nowadays with today's technology, you can be more powerful than you ever could be in the system. So that, you know, that's, it's not an either or thing nowadays. You can have your cake and eat it too. So
what would you say to people who say something like, well, I'm comfortable in the system gives me things that I can't have as an individual. I have a career laid out, promotion prospects, employment perks, etc. Because I suppose what I really mean is, what would you say to someone who said that it was basically a safe world in the system?
Well, I hope that this year has disproven that idea in some degree. I mean, especially, you know, I don't know that, you know, at the beginning of this Corona stuff, I was actually the precautionary type. I was like, okay, I even skipped work a little bit because I was worried about it. But time has gone on and we've sort of realized that, yeah, this thing's overblown. And the whole thing is a kind of like top down hysteria. And it's something that, you know, really, if you want to look at the elite, whatever you want to call them, it's like a self-imposed issue. The system has put this upon us, and people are starting to realize, oh, I really don't have stability. Like, if you were out here, like my life out here has not changed at all. It's actually, there have been many ways in which it's improved since this stuff has happened. But, you know, if you're invested in the system, even if you're making more money, you know, I have many friends who are making, who are in the city and they're making better money than I am. I have no doubt. But that's like, it's living with the sword of Damocles over your head, because ultimately you don't have control, like long-term control of what's going on. And I think this year has hopefully been a wake-up call for a lot of the people who would be tempted to say that. And additionally, you know, I look at my life now. I was not, I was in graduate school for years and years. So I wasn't like getting rich, but you know, I did constantly have that nagging fear. Oh, you know what? Maybe this isn't going to pay off. Maybe I should just leave. And you always say something like, I'm already far in it. You know, I feel like I just have to continue. And, you know, I'm not telling everyone they need to drop their job and leave immediately, you know, run to the hills or something like that. But I think there's always that temptation. Like, you need to understand that, you know, you are overvaluating the stability of the system no matter what. And this has been a year, you know, my all this stuff, the coronavirus and the riots was a self-imposed problem. Okay. It's a problem the elites let happen or made happen. Whereas what if something actually bad, what if there's a coronavirus virus that actually does wipe out, you know, 10% of the population. Okay. It's over. Like, if they're, you know, this is child's play. And the best thing I can recommend to people is just separating themselves from that. And you can still have the life your money goes further out here. You know what I mean? You can still have that life with modern technology. But it's not an either or thing. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I definitely agree that this has been a largely artificial crisis, right, this year with COVID. And of course that makes you think, well, why would the elite do this? And if they would do this, that kind of means that I can't trust them. I'd be insane to trust them.
Right.
I think that's been a realization for a lot of people in this year. I mean, there are people like me who had deep suspicions for a long time about our governments and so on. If they actually had our interests at heart, why would they be doing these different things? But it really became much more obvious this year, I think.
Yeah. And you have to remember, all of these people are prone to hysteria. Like, a lot of it is not even like planned stuff. I mean, I'm still on my listserv from my university. They are hysterical about this thing still. They really believe they have worked themselves up in this absolute frenzy. And, you know, if there's one thing I learned, working in the university, sort of the belly of the beast, is that, you know, these people, a lot of them are very, frankly, very immature. You know, when you're sucking on the teat of the system for so long, there, you really have a kind of arrested development. There's a part of you that doesn't really mature. And so a lot of these people, you know, the stereotypical SJWs and stuff like that, you know, a lot of that is just people who haven't, you know, they've never had the rigor of real life. And this sounds like a boomer thing to say, sorry, but you
but
know,
it's true, it's definitely truth to it. Sorry, go on.
What was that?
There's definitely truth to it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, and that's one thing I learned in my PhD program where, you know, I even met very famous people who have Wikipedia pages and stuff like that. But you look at them and a lot of them are behaving like kids. You know, the professors were not necessarily more mature than the students. You know what I mean? And that's the American ruling class. And a lot of them are very nice. But I will just say, when I started my PhD program, my MA program was actually great. I went to a smaller school. The department was less bureaucratic. It was less political. Mind you, I went to grad school for linguistics, which is not supposed to be a political field. But when I went to do my PhD, it is quite literally like walking into a cult. It's hard to explain, like, just the aura of it. And first off, even if you're not a, you know, I'm not the, if anyone knows me in real life, I'm very reserved in real life. I never really talk about politics or something like that, but they can just sniff dissent. And it's just this weird, it's creepy.
I wondered, it's a long time since I was in I was at university, art college. And so I never really had much contact with the lecturers, the professors. And it's a long time, it's like nearly 20 years ago. So I can't remember, and it wasn't as political then. You know, I think it's got a lot worse over the last 5 or 10 years, 10 years. So I can't even imagine what it must be like. But I can imagine that you'd be constantly thinking, have they worked it out yet, that I'm not one of them?
Yeah, they're good at sniffing it out. I will say that. And, you know, I'm sort of maybe lucky that I have the perspective of my first semester in college was actually the semester that Barack Obama was running for president first in 2008. And I just remember the feeling of the messianic attitude. You know, every class I had, doesn't matter what it was, we'd read these articles about Barack Obama and all this kind of stuff. This very, very, I mean, you know, when I was a kid, I'm just like, okay, professors are liberal or something like that. That's what you get from that. But, you know, I also had the pleasure of being in academia, you know, throughout my undergrad and grad school, to also experience the Trump, election, and just the hilarious difference, like the terrible feeling of foreboding and loathing that's universal, and people were quite literally scared for their life. These people are, I don't know, that's just how they work. And, you know, I think what's happening now, if you look at 2020, I think in the American context, it's very obvious that, you know, all of these manufactured events, manufactured crises, are to promote a kind of aura of chaos in the Trump presidency. I've even talked to, you know, conservative people who are sort of like, I just want this to be over. I just want to be able to turn on the news and hear news. Like, I just wanted to go back to normal, which normal being, oh, when Barack Obama Obama was president and you turn on the TV and everything's at least fine. You might disagree with what they're saying, but it's not like insane, you know, but the question now is like, how long are they going to keep doing this Corona stuff? Do they want to sort of put it under the rug when Joe Biden is president, or are they going to use it for something else later? That's the question. My question, you know,
I think they're going to continue it.
Yeah. It's too useful. So
it's too useful. It's so useful. I wrote a wee thing about it a few weeks ago, how useful it is, because they can endlessly adapt it and just say, well, there's a new strain now, there's a mutation, so we've got to go straight back into the full lockdown, or they can end it when they feel like it. And and of course, then there's the power that comes with this, all of this as well. Like, they can enforce a vaccine and a COVID pass, so you can't do very much anymore. Definitely, if you want to travel, for example, right, you're screwed. Well,
and you know, the bright side of all of this is that, you know, this election season, you know, we should be very thankful that we have at least some vestige of social media, even though everyone's getting censored and stuff like that. Because, you know, 40, 50 years ago, none of this stuff would have, you know, there would be no way for people to unify outside of, you know, radio or something, talk radio or something like that. And, you know, we're now at a point where in 2020, you look at polls, mainstream polls, something like 40% of Americans are like, yeah, that election was probably fake, you know, and all of these people, they have to live in a cognitive dissonance. You know, out here, no one wears a mask. I mean, every once in a while you'll see someone, but, you know, it's getting to the point where, you know, a lot of people have lived through coronavirus and they're like, oh yeah, it was a flu. There's only so far you can push people. There's only, and most people, I think, even if they try and put in these draconian regulations, most people are just, you know, over it. And now it's not something that they can even deny at this point. Like, people have no faith in the system. We all know it. It's one of those things where, you know, we might acquiesce and let them have their way this election. But, you know, the cat is out of the bag. And I think people can criticize Trump, and I will criticize Trump for, you know, being a total cuck on this or that, or failing on this or that. But the fact is, the reason they react with such, you know, loathing to him is because they correctly realized, even though his policies weren't even that, you know, even that conservative, even that radical, oh, I'm just going to actually enforce our immigration law. Even if they're nothing out of the ordinary, they correctly realize that Trump is a fighter who definitely doesn't just say what he thinks, but he is the kind of person who will lead a dissent, you know, who will voice what people are sort of saying already. So even if he's a dumb boomer, you know, he is, that's one thing that they can't undo. And that's why they still react in hysteria to him.
Well, as I said to someone else, Trump didn't actually defy them in any big way. He didn't actually come up with any laws or whatever that were grossly in violation of their ideas. But he symbolized, there was something about him that they could tell that he wasn't, as we were saying earlier, they could tell he wasn't one of them, even if he didn't really say anything.
Yeah.
So I think that was, he was more of a symbolic threat to them than anything else.
Right, right. And, you know, in the Trump election, you know, they did this thing where they tried to tie every single, you know, let's say, you know, Trump is an evil racist. Let's tie him to these people who, you know, might be doing some kind of race realism or something like that, with the idea that they would anchor Trump down, when in reality, it sort of ballooned everyone up, you know, because people are just so sick of this stuff and they're willing to evaluate things, you know, outside of what they've, you know, if you turn on the TV and it's all lies, why shouldn't you trust that? Why shouldn't you trust, you know, the moon landing? You know, why not? So,
yeah, it does create that. They kind of mess it all up for themselves by eventually they've blown their own credibility by saying something that's right, just too ridiculous. And I think, well, with Hillary Clinton's her speech in August 2016, where she linked Trump to the alt-right, Putin, the Proud Boys, I think the KKK as well, and Alex Jones, all of that. It was actually all one big miasma. Yeah. That Trump was at the top of it, which is just absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. And at this point, it's more, you know, just as an example, I had a friend once who I guess was like a pathological liar. liar. And if you've ever met someone like that, there are a lot of times where you know they're lying, and it's just not worth it to bring it up with them. And I think that's sort of how it is. People sort of know the media is, you know, lying about all this stuff. They don't trust it. It's just more awkward not to bring it up, you know, to bring it up or anything. And I think that's even the case, you know, back in 2015, 2016, it was funny to do edgy humor. You know, people would say really edgy stuff to like get a reaction from liberals or something like that. Now, honestly, I think of that as big cringe because, you know, it's almost like they're always going to react the same way. It's just don't make them make a mess. Just forget about it, you know? And so sort of bringing back to the theme, the issue, like a lot of people want to fight them on their own turf. That was sort of my idea when I was in academia. I mean, not necessarily on a political ground, but, oh, you know, here are these things that the system got wrong and the system is honest. And, you know, if I make critiques of them, they'll take those into account. You know, that is not something that works. It's a waste of your effort, frankly. The real prerogative should be separating yourself from that. It's much less frustrating. I'll just tell you that, you know, when you psychologically, you know, one of the reasons that people are so depressed or sad or stuff like that, I don't identify as a self-help guru. I think that's really stupid, frankly. The reason people are so depressed about things is because they are investing in portions of their life that they have no control over. Like you can be living independently and you will find that that is much more pleasurable and you actually have a lot more. You might feel like, oh, the system controls everything I do. They really don't. They really don't have any control over you. I mean, if let's say Biden becomes president next year and you don't turn on the TV or social media, will it actually affect you? Maybe. There probably will be one or two things, maybe your taxes or something like that. But on most affairs, the whole game of politics is just to keep you emotionally invested in it. That's not that I'm not endorsing apathy in any of this kind of stuff. I do think that people should, you know, vote and stuff like that. But I think people exaggerate the extent to which their life actually depends on what goes on in and out of politics. That's what I'm saying.
But I guess an obvious criticism that could be made here is, well, what you're saying would rob people of any ability to influence how their society develops.
I don't think that at all. I mean, I think, you have to be clear about what society means here, because, you know, there's society as it exists in the natural world as a bottom-up phenomenon. You know, you live out here, you know your plumber and your carpenter, you go to church. That, you know, that's society, okay? That's actual society. Whereas, you know, there is this engineered society that you see on TV, where, you know, every commercial has interracial couples and, you know, everyone loves Disney and Marvel heroes and stuff. That is like hold on, someone's knocking at the door. Hey, what's up?
I'll mute him while he's away. Weird. Okay, if anyone has questions for Luke, you can post them on Entropy or in the DLive chat. I don't know who it is. He said that he was using a friend's house in order to do this live stream. So, because where he is doesn't have Wi-Fi or whatever. So I don't know who it is that he's talking to. Don't worry about it. I'm sure it's nothing untoward. It's not that weird, anger. Come on. He's just using a friend's house. he's back. Right, hold on. Sorry, I muted you while you were away. Sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry about that. So the place I am, I'm at a friend's house, and they have like this trailer of Mexicans that live on their property. And the thing is, they know that I'm the only person around who speaks Spanish. And so I have to talk to them every time that, you know, they have something. So they just want to give their rent. Anyway, sorry, apologies for that. I didn't expect them to be interrupting me at 7:30 or something like that. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, society.
Well, how many Mexicans get into your society, ironically enough?
Yeah,
that would be a good example.
Funny how that works. But I think you have a lot of say in the actual, like bottom up society that you can live in. You have, it's crazy how much you do. I think people don't even realize it because a lot of people don't live small town life anymore where everyone knows everyone else and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, the society that corporate board members put on TV, no one has any control of that. They have control of that. And, you know, the best that you can do is set an example for people and tell them, you know, just sort of unplug from that system. I guess put it out there that it's not necessary to be a part of that. So that's just one of those things.
Would you also say that it was an illusion that people ever had much influence on how their society develops? Because I think it probably was.
Yeah, I think, well, and again, it depends on, you know, at the local level, you have a lot of say, but still it's something that's very emergent. So there's a sense in which no one really controls it. But when it comes to the political realm, yeah, no one's ever had control of over this. There's this idea that like democracy is a real thing. It's never like democracy, you know, what, if you look at what democracy formally is, let's say you have, you know, elections for referenda for everything. That doesn't mean that, you know, the political power in America is equally divided through 300 million people and they all have a say. Really, that means everyone's power is reduced to 1/300,000,000th, which is nothing. And who really controls the game is, you know, people who control the mass media, right? That's what democracy is. It's rule by the media, the intellectual, the sort of opinion molding class. That's how it is everywhere. And that's why when people say something like, you know, Trump's victory is a disaster for democracy. Yes, that's literally true because democracy, as in rule by media, lost, and that's a problem for them.
That is a good point. I agree with you about rule by media. I think that is what the democracy has become. I don't know if it was ever any different, but I think you're right that the big thing with 2016 was that the media lost, and they lost the sense that they could control the public. And I think that just enraged them and terrified them as well, actually.
Yeah, and that's why they didn't want to miss any shots in 2020. So you have, you know, again, these riots, you have the corona stuff, you probably have a lot of low-level election fraud and stuff like that. It's sort of mysterious what's going to happen in the future with elections in the United States. Is this just going to be something that happens every 4 years, this aura of chaos? I mean, in the past, mind you, if you look at, let's say, Nixon's elections, okay, who Nixon, of course, has been totally slandered by history. I mean, I'm not saying he's a good president, but, you know, it's weird, actually, when you come to think of it. Nixon got ousted because he, you know, he indirectly spied on some Democratic, you know, party people. Whereas, you know, Barack Obama can just have, you know, these NSA programs spying on everyone. He's not going to get in trouble.
Yeah, it's incredible.
But anyway, in the Nixon elections, in 64 and 68, I think, I want to say this one, you know, both of them were marked by a bunch of left-wing riots, including mass bombings and things like this, that people know, race riots and stuff like that. And Nixon won both of his elections in overwhelming landslides. Okay, so that's one of the things when people are, you know, if the media doesn't have enough control over the narrative and stuff like that, that's the kind of stuff that happens. A lot of people who were Democratic voters would vote for a guy like Nixon, who was not a charismatic guy, frankly. Anyway, I was going to say something else, but I forgot it.
Well, that does make me scared. Well, yeah, I'm not sure what we can safely say on YouTube. But the fact that chaos led to landslide victories for Nixon, but chaos of this year didn't lead to a landslide victory for Trump, that does seem suspicious.
Yeah, it does. It definitely does. And it's just an issue of how much is that actually fakery, or is it because, you know, people are just so plugged into the system? I mean, Facebook, you know, was doing this stuff where they, you know, remind people who are likely to be leftist voters to vote. You know, you have this sending out ballots all over the place. And I don't think that people on the left and people on the right are equally likely to exploit those laws and stuff like that. You know, and a lot of Americans, you have to remember, like I, for example, I've moved around to different states. It's very normal when you move to another state to keep your registration. I mean, your voter registration, it doesn't automatically cancel. So it's theoretically possible someone could have actually voted for me in Georgia. Actually, Georgia might be blue because of me. Sorry, guys. because someone might have voted for me. It's easy to do that kind of low level stuff, but yeah. Anyway,
so it is, again, this is something that I think has emerged this year: the fact that it's hard to influence society, but it's even harder to understand what society now and what's really going on and how you should interact with it. The COVID stuff, BLM, and now the US election, which we won't go into too much. I think all of this has led people to think, well, the system is out of anyone's, definitely out of the ordinary person's control, but also almost difficult, almost impossible to understand.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's always going to be out of our control, though. So that's why, again, like politics is never, you're never going to have a say. If you had a say, you would be a dictator. Okay. It's never going to happen. So the prerogative should always be, let me put myself in a place where I actually have direct power over my own life instead of, oh, I'm going to be an employee. Oh, I'm going to, live off some kind of state service and ride the bus every day and stuff. Oh, I don't want to have property that costs money, stuff like that. I don't want to be responsible. I don't want to have a real job. That's what poor people do, stuff like that.
I definitely agree with you that people should maximize their own independence and their control over their own lives. I think that's definitely a good idea. I just wonder, where does that leave them? Because then, the government, the overall society could just choose to wipe them out. It could choose to do whatever it wanted to them.
The fact of the matter is it's not worth their effort to wipe you out. I mean, there have been some high profile cases in the United States. There used to be the government, sort of played with doing stuff like this in the 90s, maybe even the 80s. There were a couple cases, there's like the Ruby Ridge debacle or the Waco stuff, where the government, under the Clinton administration, targeted either right-wing groups or religious groups. And it was always a disaster because a lot of these people, there are a lot of people who ended up getting killed. I mean, even people on the left will look back at these things and say, this was a terrible thing we shouldn't have done. The fact, this isn't just for our government, it's for all governments of all point, at all points in time. If it's not worth their effort to come and get you, they're not going to come and get you.
I take the point about that, and I agree with you. If it's just going to make them look bad, they won't do it. But what I mean when I say wipe you out is, for example, through mass immigration or something like that. In Europe, especially, this is maybe less applicable to America, but this is the kind of thing I mean, where the government, if you're not going to try to influence society at large, but you think that society at large is very sick, then, well, what are you going to, what should be done? What would you say about that dilemma?
I mean, are you just saying that some kind of, if you're saying that collective action politically is necessary to solve some of those problems, I sort of agree with that, but I don't really see an obvious way of doing that in either the United States or Europe. Obviously, we have, the Hart-Celler Act and stuff like that, which has done the same kind of stuff in the United States. I would endorse any kind of, I would vote for anyone who wants to get rid of that kind of stuff. But just as a statement of realistic fact, I don't think, I'm not going to invest my life on the chance of that, us getting rid of that. I'm just saying that, I'll never say don't be involved in politics. I'll never say don't vote. I'll never say, in fact, you should do all of those kind of things, but it's the foundation of that should be your personal independence. Okay. If you're someone in fact, you are more likely to influence the system if you are personally independent. If you're someone who went to college a million years and, got all this kind of debt in school and then went to a job where you're salaried and you basically have to do whatever your boss says and like you don't have that much freedom of speech, you're going to be domesticated by the system. You're not going to have the ability to do this or that, to do political activism or stuff like that. So, what I'm recommending is the first step to anything, whether you want to influence politics, whether you want to abstain from politics, that is I think is the most important first step. Just separating yourself. It doesn't have to be, I'm just moving to the woods today, but it has to be, every, you know, that I did a video a while ago where I said one of the heuristics I adopted is if I'm given a life decision, where to move or something like that, or what to do or what to buy, I always make my decision based on which is going to make me more independent. And I think that's a good heuristic to live by. It doesn't mean just abandoning everything, but just step by step, and encourage your friends to do those things as well. And frankly, you know, when I moved out here, obviously I have a bunch of people who watch my channel or, and are interested, you know, in the life that I live, which honestly is not a weird life. Lots of people out here live it, obviously. But you know, people are very interested in that. They're piqued by the idea. Oh, I can say whatever I want on the internet. I can do this or that. It's just, I don't know. I'm just saying that's step one, you know?
Oh, yeah. All right. Okay. I did have a question stored up for you, but I've forgotten what it was now. It's exited. Cause I'll just ask you some questions from Entropy. All right. Oh, someone says, hello, MW and Luke. Hope you're both well. Missed most of the millennial streams today as I was having a nice, steady few beers with a mate. Not drunk, but reminiscing was exactly what I needed. Take care. Well, thank you very much. Send some comment. I'm glad you had a good time. Do you think Daman Edward Dutton would have suggested Jack the Beast? I think probably the answer is yes, but I don't want to answer that on his behalf. Okay. All right. And someone asks, has Luke read The Art of Linux Programming?
I have basically never read a book on technology whatsoever. Everything I do on my channel, I just sort of learned myself. Actually, that's usually what I recommend to people. Just tinker with it yourself, and then, you know, you'll figure it out. That's really how people learn things. I mean, books are nice to have as references, but yeah, I usually don't read them like that.
All right. I agree. And when I was learning programming and web design and stuff, I had an encyclopedia thing of JavaScript, and that was it really. And then a forum to ask questions on. But yeah, that was it. Okay. Luke, which folk group mentioned in the books the book Albion Seed is your favorite?
Well, definitely Borderers, because they're the real America. Everyone else is fake. Are you familiar with that book? Do you know what that is?
No.
Okay. So, well, I mentioned beforehand, you know, so I did this podcast. Okay. It's called Not Related. It's notrelated.xyz is the website. Oh, by the way, my website is lukesmith.xyz. It's classic boomer website, just simple HTML page. I love it. I recently redid it. Anyway, so my podcast, I just do episodes on random things that I don't think, you know, get, I guess, representation. Either way, Albion Seed is a book basically about the settlement of America and the different ethnic groups, all of which are English in effect, that settled America in different places. So, you know, the Puritans, the Quakers, the planter Anglicans, and, you know, the borderers. And actually most of American regional politics, and really most of the politics even today, like, why is the Northeast liberal? Well, they come from this Puritan stock, and, you know, that historical development, the Puritan stock actually started most of the universities in the United States. They're arguably, you know, what, you know, Moldbug calls the cathedral, right? Whereas people like the borderers, they're originally Scotch-Irish, and they make up most of, you know, the American backcountry and stuff like that. So, you know, that's an interesting book just for the anecdotes and stuff like that. So, you know, if anyone's interested. But I did a podcast episode on it. If you're too lazy to read a book, it is actually a good book just to flip through. Very interesting book. But
all right, here's an interesting question: will the Hyperloop kill the suburb?
The Hyperloop. I've heard that term. What is that exactly?
It's a proposed. I've got the Wikipedia page up, so I can tell you. It's a proposed mode of passenger and freight transportation, first used to describe an open source VAC train design. Basically, it's like a very fast train, and presumably looping around cities, I think.
Okay.
Tesla's involved, and Elon Musk. Ah, right. The Hyperloop concept has been explicitly open sourced by Elon Musk and SpaceX, and others have been encouraged to take the ideas and further develop them. And to that end, a few companies have been formed. So All right. I think they're talking about I think neither of us knows anything about this, so we're not really in a position to answer the question.
Yeah.
So, sorry about that. Okay, Trump handled the riots very badly. He was a constant antagonist. He was an absolute demigod of anarchy. Could he not have attempted to be diplomatic? His tremendous ego over the peace of a nation. Do you have anything to say?
Yeah, Trump basically did nothing about these riots. Because, I don't know, maybe he's going for the base black vote or something under the idea that people in inner cities like these riots or something like that, when in reality they don't. Trump definitely should have been a lot harder on those, that, you know, just even harder rhetorically. I know he said some things, but, you know, that arguably is one of the reasons I think that we can, if we want to be nice, one of the reasons the Nixon elections might be very different from this one, in that Trump tried to play both sides. He would say, he'd tweet out law and order and stuff like that. But, you know, there have been many things that Trump has had very few teeth about. This should be a very unambiguous case. And guess what? Black people don't like riots in their neighborhoods either. Okay, you can look at the polls of every people of all races. All of them were like, oh, we want more policing, please. You know, chaos doesn't get anyone riled up except for these anarchists who are doing this stuff. So, you know, bad political call. He was trying to play both sides as if there is a real side over there, but it was stupid of Trump, I think.
All right. Hey, Luke, is Moldbug a CZEC for the libertarian mob?
Is he a what for the libertarian mob?
CZEC, Slavoj, I forgot.
Oh, Zizek?
Zizek, sorry. Zizek. Slavoj Zizek.
Well, that comparison I've never heard made, but I mean, yeah, there is a sense in which both Moldbug and Zizek, they just sort of have word soup. That's just what they do. Both of them are sort of like, and you know, reading, okay. Every once in a while, I'll say something about Moldbug in a stream. I don't view him as a big influence on me, but he's just one of those guys to quote because sometimes he has some zingers. But those zingers are like embedded in this like very deep and idiosyncratic prose that it just sounds incoherent. I remember when I first read Moldbug when I was an undergrad, probably 2010 or something like that. And I just remember just being totally confused. I mean, you have to sort of know what he's talking about before you actually understand what he's saying. But yeah, he is sort of like Zizek. I've often compared him to Nietzsche in his writing style. Nietzsche is a lot easier to understand, but they both write in that style where they expect you to sort of know. They beat around the bush and expect you to figure it out yourself, you know.
All right, I was just typing something in there. Okay, somebody asks, is that watch a Casio F91W?
yeah, it is. Yeah, people, I don't know why, they can always identify. This is like the cheap. I shouldn't say they're cheap as if they're bad, but like it's sort of a cult favorite. Yeah. It costs like $5. But people always ask, you know?
Yeah, I had one of those in the early 90s, and I think even then it was like a recognized thing from the late 80s, right, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Okay. Multiculturalism is being forced everywhere. Independence isn't cooperation. How do we foment social bonds or power in a society that is being destroyed through diversity?
Well, when I say independence, I'm not saying you go live in the woods and never talk to anyone. That's not what I'm saying. Living out here, I am much more connected to people than I've ever been. You know, I will, like, this is the environment. You will have dinner at people's houses multiple times a week. You will be doing this and that socially. You'll be going to church. You'll be doing this. You know everyone who works at every store in town. So it's not, you are building social bonds if you're becoming more independent. I'm not saying move into a cabin in the woods. A lot of my subscribers joke about it as if I'd moved to a cabin in the woods, but that's not what I do. Really, I just live normal life that most people in America still really live out past the suburbs and stuff like this. This is just called, again, it's not like I don't like meme terms like self-reliance, self-help. It's just called normal life. That's all it is. That's all I'm recommending people to do. Okay.
And prior to this, you were, just to be clear, you were in a city or a college campus doing the when you were a graduate?
Right. So I went to Georgia State University. I got a degree in international economics and modern languages. I did an MA at the University of Georgia, and then I went out to the University of Arizona to do a PhD. I'm technically ABD. That means I've done everything for the degree except for I haven't written a dissertation. Theoretically, I could finish it. I'm done with classes, but at this point, I'm so over it that even writing the dissertation is just like, actually, everyone quits once they've gotten ABD. They're like, screw it. I'll get a real job or something like that. But and academia nowadays, it's funny because it's really selecting people who are incompetent and selecting people who are like in the old world, you know, people who went to universities, they have this kind of, I hate the word intellectual because I think it's always a stupid thing to call people, but intellectual style. They're naturally interested in academic things. They're the people who are very interested in these political, philosophical issues. But what's happening nowadays is the people who make it through academia are the people who can put up with bureaucracy, the people who are paper pushers and stuff like that. So when I was in graduate school, one of the most disheartening things to see was to see people who are obviously intelligent and would be just world-shattering intellects in the field, for them to be sidelined and for people who, you know, do all the dots or, you know, diversity hires or, you know, all these kind of people who are just in the system for the system's reasons, who don't actually enjoy graduate school. You can actually, it's an interesting time because it's one of those things that if you are made for it, you'll love it. If you're not, you'll hate it. And it's really easy to do if you love it. It's terrible if you hate it. And that's because, you know, graduate school, when I went there, it's like, this is what I do all day anyway. Wow, now I'm getting paid for it. This is fantastic. Whereas some people are like, I don't want to read articles and know stuff. Oh, this is hard. I don't have it. I want my advisors to tell me what to write because I don't have individual thoughts. That's what a lot of people who are becoming professors now are doing. And mind you, if you want to get blackpilled about the state of academia, it's actually very easy. Go to your university near you, your state university. Could be Yale or Harvard, anywhere. Go to your university and look up the titles and abstracts of recent dissertations. You will want to KYS yourself after that because you will see all the stupid things that people are writing dissertations on, most of which are totally, like, they're not even, one of the most common, sorry, I'm just sort of going off on a tangent here. But one of the most common things that I just love, especially in sort of diversity studies kind of stuff, you know what I mean? People will write dissertations. Let's say you see a dissertation in African American studies. It will be a case study about what it's like to be an African American in graduate school, when in reality, it's just something autobiographical from the person, you know, doing the degree, right? That's actually something very common now where people are not even intellectually capable of doing research. They literally write autobiographies for their dissertations. That is actually something very, in some state universities, most dissertations look like that. It's pathetic.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if those autobiographies aren't even very honest, aren't even very self-reflective, because it'll just be a highly politicized account of what they're actually experiencing.
Yeah, it's like the, oh yeah, this totally happened. It's like their own imagination it's funny. That's one of the reasons, you know, when I saw stuff like that, I you know, a lot of people will come to me like, oh, Luke, you know, you're interested in these issues. Oh, you seem to know so much about, you know, linguistics or whatever stuff I'm talking about. Why don't you want to be a professor anymore? Why don't you want to do that? It just seems like a waste. Hey, you know, I might find that sad, but it's just not going to happen. Like, this is not the world for that. You know, maybe after the collapse, which I don't really believe in a collapse, but, you know, maybe in some different world that can happen, but not in this world that we're living in. If you want any kind of research, it has to be something independent nowadays. That's just how it is, you know.
Because the university, the establishment is so homogenized that at this point, it won't brook any dissent, I'm guessing, is the point. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, if I can, I'll mention my podcast again, because I did, this is one of the reasons I did this podcast, because if you look at the state, I did an episode on the use of statistics in academia nowadays. Here's a little known fact, and this is not a controversial fact. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is a little known but undeniable fact about how statistics are used. When you go to college or whatever, you will learn how to, you'll learn how to do null hypothesis testing. You've probably seen this. You know, it's when you get your p-value, check if it's less than 0.05. I assume you've heard of this, or other people have heard of this. I mean, this is the kind of stuff you see in scientific articles, even in the popular press. It's really a ritual, originated as a misunderstanding of some basic. Basically, there were two different groups of people who were doing statistical tests, and some textbook writers back in the 60s misunderstood them and merged these different methods into one singular method that's now taught as fact in all academia. If you go into neuroscience, if you go to economics, if you go to sometimes even physics, psychology, linguistics, all of these different fields use this statistical technique that you can go on YouTube and that's what they teach as, you know, this is statistics, that this is what you do. The entire thing is actually fraudulent. I shouldn't say fraudulent. It's philosophically baseless, and it's just a pattern. It's a ritual that academics go through. And within statistics, if you actually ask a statistician who's knowledgeable about this, they'll often say, we know that every other field use statistics incorrectly. That's just how it is nowadays. But that's sort of a testament to the fact that if you want to look at my podcast episode on this, it was like the null ritual or something like that. Again, not related.xyz is the website, but it's just sort of shows you the fact that academia, the standards are so low, and so much of it is just sort of based on like repeating things that someone has learned uncritically and repeating patterns to publish papers. Peer review is actually another thing I can whine about for a long time, because that's another thing that is totally dysfunctional and does the opposite of what it's supposed to do. Like the entirety of academia is just, it's not even worth, like when I started graduate school, I was like, wow, look at all the problems in my field. This means I can buy low and sell high. I can do a bunch of, contribute to the field and do all this kind of stuff. But you realize that the system is not supposed to be corrected. It's just doing its thing. It doesn't care what's true. That's just how it is. So frustrating, I'll tell you that.
Frustrating, yeah, it must be. I mean, it's frustrating enough to be outside of this academic environment and seeing this stuff, to be inside it and not be on board with that. It must be maddening, I would think. I'm not surprised that you were glad to get out. What I'm curious, if you don't mind going into this, what was it that made you finally just jack it in and leave all of that?
I mean, obviously this is happening, you know, as years went on, it got worse and worse. I usually tell people this might not actually be true. I mean, I don't think there was a one moment where I was like, oh, I'm going to forget about all this. But I remember right before the 2016 election, you know, for the whole time I was like, oh yeah, Trump's going to win this. It's going to work. But then in the last week, I was like, you know what? Maybe he won't. Okay. If he doesn't win, what can I do? You know, what, the ban hammer is going to come down. It actually ended up coming down anyway, even though we got elected. But, you know, all these things, the cat is sort of out of the bag. What can I do to be more independent? And, you know, simultaneously at my university, there was basically a witch hunt going on for me and some of the other students who they could sense dissent in. So I sort of realized, like, there's no future here for me. And that's when I sort of said to myself, okay, I'm going to move to somewhere that I have more control over myself. I'm going to leave the system. I actually ended up staying for one more year because I had already signed a lease and stuff like that. And, you know, I held out a little bit of hope. But, you know, that's the time that I tell people. And at the same period, I was sort of watching YouTube. I'm actually not a big YouTube watcher. I sort of make the joke that a lot of times when I'm putting out a video once a day, I'm usually actually producing more YouTube videos than I consume. And that arguably is sometimes true. But I remember watching all these channels of people living independently. Back in the day, there was, you know, Varg, if you remember him. who, you know, he's a funny guy, but, you know, he just moved out into rural France, has a wife and like 8 kids or something like that. And, you know, even if you're living in what amounts to poverty, there's a freedom that you have there that is actually that I had to be jealous of, you know. And, you know, that's during this period where I started making these decisions. And I started, as I said, living by this heuristic of when I have a life decision, I'm going to choose whatever makes me more independent. So.
Right. Okay. I can understand that. Okay. Someone says, I'm still pissed. Sorry. I'm still pissed that Trump never joined some alt tech network like Gab or some other Mastodon node. How far and for how long should we push boomers to adopt alternative solutions to centralized legacy software?
Well, so my opinions on this, first off, I think Trump is on, what's that one that boomers actually use?
Parler,
yeah. So I think he's on that.
He's also on Telegram, by the way. There is an official Donald Trump Sorry, okay. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, I mean, Gab is like a wingnut site, frankly. You know, whatever. I'm not saying that necessarily in a bad way, but there are very few people on there who weren't just, you know, banned for extremism or something like that. There's like not a boomer audience on Gab. Now I will say this. I hear that question, and I'm now going to respond in the way that I want to something different. This is what Noam Chomsky does. I know Noam Chomsky. I met him in Arizona. I actually shared an office with him. That's a fun fact. Most people probably don't even know who Noam Chomsky is. Who cares? What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So on alternate sites, I am a big fan. I actually did a playlist on this. This is actually more of my Linux stuff, but I was sort of uniting the Linux stuff with I guess, the theme of independence. I'm a big proponent of people having their own websites, having their own RSS feeds, having their own email servers. I did a series of tutorials on that a little bit ago. There might be, you know, some requisite knowledge, but that's something I firmly believe. And I'm actually very glad to say that many of my subscribers now have their own websites and stuff like that. There's a small network of them. And additionally, when it comes to this guy mentioned Mastodon, for those who don't know that, for those watching this who aren't familiar with my channel or other things, there is technology out there that is truly censorship-proof, and it's called, you know, federated software. Okay, so for example, I run this thing called PeerTube. Okay, PeerTube is sort of a YouTube alternative, but it's really software that you can run on any server. So I have a PeerTube instance. If you go to videos.lukesmith.xyz, there is actually basically a video site where I back up all my videos, okay? And there are equivalents. Mastodon is an equivalent of Twitter. Anyone could just run a Mastodon instance on their own server. It's software that is federated. You can run it yourself, and it also connects with other nodes so that, you know, someone who has an account on your node can see nodes that you might follow or that are connected to yours. So it's a way of getting the benefits of YouTube, but without the censorability. So at worst, your local node might ban you if you violate their terms. You can actually just start a node, you know, you can start an account elsewhere. You could start your own node. So this is, a lot of people talk about alternate sites like Parler. Gab used to be federated. It's not anymore. I think they switched to the Mastodon stuff, and then it doesn't work anymore, basically. But Parler and sites like this, I don't think of them as being a true long-term solution. Boomers will get on them, but the true long-term technological solution is, you know, federation and making these kind of things like Mastodon or the other one that's better than Mastodon, Pleroma, that's what it's called. Or, you know, PeerTube or stuff like this. I would like this stuff to be sort of, just talk about it at the water cooler, you know. Look it up. It might be a sort of nerd stuff right now, but hopefully in the future, it's something that normal people can get into, you know. And additionally, I will say this also, you know, even though I have a channel talking about technology all the time, I am also constantly advocating not using technology for things. Like, if you're still in this, you know, mindset of having everything, having being connected to your phone all the time, having, you know, your calendar and everything sync, I think of that as being a bad habit. Not just because you're reliant, you're often just giving your information to Google. You should always use free software alternatives or local, alternatives to that. But even aside from that, I think it's a very bad habit for people to be too reliant on their technology. I rarely take my cell phone out. I only have it here because I'm using the internet for this stream. And if you want to be freer of the system mentally, it's always a good idea to just abstain from using the cell phone, abstain from scrolling down social media all day. It will be good for your mental state. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I can vouch that it is good to get off Twitter. Even if you're forced off Twitter, you should be kind of glad off it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Twitter sucks. Like, it's weird to think that, back in 2015, like Twitter was, Jack Dorsey called it the free speech party of the free speech wing of the free speech party. It's crazy how things have changed. Twitter is arguably the most controlled site on the entire internet, and it's nothing but insane liberals now, people who are still doing this Russia stuff,
Yeah, yeah. No one else has a long-term future on there. And it's definitely no one else can rely on having a long-term future on there. So someone's asking about Gab no longer implementing Mastodon. I don't know if that's something that we want to get into.
Understanding, I'll say it real quick. Don't take my ideas being 100% true. I might be wrong on this. But Gab originally, they had their own software. They then switched to Mastodon. Because again, this is one of these federated sites where different sites can interact with each other. And now I think they're using Mastodon still, but they broke the federation ability for some reason. Gab is trying to monetize their site. I'm not big on Gab. I think theoretically I actually have a Gab account now that I think about it, never used it. And I don't really plan on it. I don't really see a future in, listen, I mean, I have my videos automatically back up on my personal PeerTube instance I actually believe in, but I have them automatically back up on BitChute and Library and stuff like that. But alternate platforms, again, I don't view them as the solution unless they are federated. And Gab right now, it's to my understanding, it's not actually federated.
Okay. I don't know, so I can't comment on this. It seems to change quite a lot. Okay. Do you have any knowledge of Slavic languages like Croatian?
No, that is one Indo-European language family I don't know about. I mean, originally, for those who don't know, hold on. They're at the door again. Give me a second.
Okay.
Okay, un poco más. Tengo que hablar con una persona.
Okay. I'm back.
Okay. All right.
I told them 30 minutes, and I guess it's been 30 minutes. How much longer do we have?
Just another couple minutes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can stay longer. I just don't want to. I got to service these poor guys. It's funny because the other week, I have to talk to these Mexicans for them. A month or so ago, they wanted to get some electrical wire out to their trailer, and it's been like a month. Every time I see them, every time they see me, they walk up to me and ask about it. Like I know, I don't know what's going on there. But anyway, what was I talking about?
The Indo-European language family.
Yeah, yeah. Originally, when I first got into linguistics, when I was a teenager, I learned Latin and Greek and stuff like that. And I sort of got into Indo-Europeanism and stuff. Learning Latin was one of the biggest, most beneficial things, unexpectedly beneficial things I've ever done, by the way. Just if someone wants to know. What did I say? I studied a lot of Indo-European languages, Sanskrit, Persian. I don't know, you know it, but I never really got into Slavic languages. So nothing really to say about it.
Okay. And somebody asks, what would have to happen for you to consider moving to Europe, and which European country would you move to?
I wouldn't move out of the United States. I don't really... I mean, it's a different world than me. I don't, it's hard to explain. Okay. I don't even believe in tourism. Okay. Much less abandoning my, the place I have roots and moving to somewhere else. If I had to move to some foreign country, I mean, it would have to be somewhere in the Anglosphere, but I wouldn't do that. I almost actually moved to Tennessee when I was looking for a rural place to live, but I ended up deciding against that just because I don't have family around. And I think that people need to, you know, really highly value their connections with their family. I'm not one of these large, actually where I live, I don't like the climate, you know, but this is where my family is. And, you know, it's been our land for generations since, you know, sometime in the mid 1800s or something like that, a little after the Civil War, probably. I'm not the kind of person who gets up and does whatever. So.
All right. Okay. And opinions on Gopher. Is it a bygone protocol or does it have potential?
Yeah, it's a bygone. So I assume you don't know what this is, Gopher.
No, no.
Okay. So it's sort of, you know how people used to complain about like, oh, VCRs suck, we should be using Betamax.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, it's basically like that. Like, Gopher is an equivalent of HTTP or whatever. And someone, frankly, this other YouTuber did a video on it because, oh, wow, it's minimal or something. And there are advantages to it, but no one uses it. So if you make a Gopher site, it's useless. No one's going to see it. Like, who cares? So, yeah, it doesn't matter. If
you want some of it.
Alternative to the modern web, you have to, you know, have some interface that normal humans can view it. So,
yeah, exactly. That's the problem with going too niche. It might well be safe, but it's no one's ever going to see it. Okay, then, just a couple of questions from a guy who seems to be a mega fan. He said, I've shilled Luke's channel for ages. Good to see him here on Millennial. Thank you. And he says, how is Luke doing with 4G internet at his house?
Well, obviously, I'm not at my house now, so I'm not done. The thing I need next... So I've always had... sorry, I'm texting someone about the Mexicans. hold on. So around a month or so ago, I did a little stream where I like raised money to get this like antenna that picks up 4G and turns it into internet you can use at your house. I have all the equipment now. I've been testing it. The thing I need now is actually a harness. I have a ham radio tower. I should do a video on this because people are interested. Put money down on it. So I'm trying to be able to live stream from my own house and do other things from my own house. I have the slowest internet in the universe. So I have most of the things. I just want to be safe. I want to get a harness so I can climb my tower without literally dying. Because it's probably, I don't know how tall it is. Maybe 100 feet. Probably more than that. I'm not quite sure. So.
Oh, bloody hell. Okay. That does sound like something that would be of interest to a lot of people if they could see exactly what they need to do in order to, like, and what equipment they need and all that in order to do that. Yeah. I think it's quite interesting for a lot of people. And some
I will say that.
Sorry, go on.
I was going to say a lot of people get worried about not having good internet out in the middle of nowhere. I will say just having a phone with there's so many cell towers now. Using your phone's internet actually works in a lot of places. Like, you know, in town, like I'm not in a big town. I'm in a town, you know, of a couple hundred people. But the cell tower here, you get like 100 megs down, man. It's crazy. So there are a lot of things people worry about. Internet is one of those things. I'm just saying my particular circumstance where my house is, it's particularly remote. But in most places, it's going to be fine, you know.
Okay, and then finally he says, I'm disappointed. I thought Luke would be a G-Shock guy. I don't know what G-Shock is.
G-Shock.
Yeah. I don't know what he's referring to. Something even more niche. Okay, well, let's end it there because this has been a good one. I do think that your general message that people should maximize their own independence and self-sufficiency, I think is very sensible, especially as we were saying earlier that life in cities doesn't seem to be as stable or reliable as it seemed 20 years ago or even 5 years ago or even this time last year, in fact. So, yeah, I think it does seem to be a good direction to be going in for many people. So, okay, Luke Smith, thank you for taking part in Millennial.
Yeah, no problem. Good to be on.
All right. I'll be back in 40 minutes, round about that, with Anti-Dem. In the meantime, thanks for watching. I'll see you then.